Hey there, loyal listeners. As you know, the Top Games podcast is made possible by Hardcore Gaming 101's Patreon supporters, who help keep this show alive by donating as little as $2 each month. If you were to join them in doing that, you would not only help keep the lights on at HG 101 Towers, you'd also get access to our super secret Patreon RSS feed, which is full of ad-free versions of this podcast with exclusive bonus game rankings. Here's a taste of what you've been missing. We're talking Plague Attack for the Atari Video Computer System. It takes place in a human mouth. You're like a militant tube of toothpaste in a gigantic hell mouth full of molars. The incoming enemies, which are like, you know, candy canes and hamburgers, hot dogs, ice cream cones, etc.
I think if you get 35,000 points, you can send away to Activision and join the Plaque Defender squad or something. They'll send you
An actual patch you can sew on your clothes, don't they?
What kids like came to school with like their like Activision patches on that didn't just get immediately just like bullied within an inch of their lives? Like,
I'm a member of the Plaque Defender squadron.
Go to patreon.com/HG101 and pledge a couple bucks. That's patreon.com/HG101. Act now and be a hero.
Some, this is painfully obvious, but hardcore gaming means it ain't for the novices. The main source to brain train your knowledge and lay maintain with a course aimed at colleges. To HG 101 we give the honor, thanks to Kirk Alada, Xerxes, the host of Proper, as well as Satanga, Cal and Bobinator, Ogre Hart and others. Discuss and discover all the 47,000 games, and when they rate them, you can bet it's scientifically locked in position. Speaking of which, no system is obscure, and look, they wrote a book about it, go out and cop yours.
Hello and welcome to HardcoreGaming101.net's Top 47,858 Games of All Time podcast, where we objectively, definitively, and scientifically rank the games that you nominate. My name is Xerxes, and I'm the show's main host and producer, and on this podcast we have three rules. Rule 1, all rankings are final, official, and scientifically accurate. Rule 2, you can nominate one game at a time via 5-star review on iTunes or Stitcher. Those are the ones we try to get to first. You can also go to bit.ly/rankthisplease. And add a game to the slush pile and cross your fingers. We make no guarantees on those. Rule number 3, you can nominate games that have already been nominated, just don't nominate games you've already ranked. See the master list for yourself. It's at bit.ly/47kgames. That's bit.ly/47kgames.
Dogs Bower. Hey, Dogs Bower. Hey, Dogs Bower. Hey, Dogs Bower.
You must be with Tim.
Okay, for this episode, we're going to be talking about Silent Hill 4, The Room. And it's with me here to discuss it are...
I'm Carl.
I'm Shoku.
And I'm Yartza Croshaw from the internet.
Yes, you may remember him from such things as the zero punctuation, right?
Yeah.
That guy, right? You sound a lot like him.
I'm that guy, yes.
So, and this game was nominated by, I believe, you. You're kind of our special guest for the next few episodes, so thanks for that. And
you're welcome. Yes, I did nominate this one because it's one of my favorite Silent Hills after Silent Hill 2, obviously. Mm-hmm. Because I think there's a lot of Silent Hill games where they got this idea that there was a formula to it. You go around Haunted Town, then you go into like a hospital or a hotel or something. You explore all the rooms. Wibbly wobbly otherworld transition, explore all the rooms again, fight a boss, move on to the next. But Silent Hill 4 was a bit polarizing in that it completely got away from that. You are a dork who's trapped in his house, his apartment. It's called The Room, but there's like three rooms. And you wake up one morning and there's a portal to hell in your bathroom. And it moves on from there, really.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is really relatable to a lot of gamers.
Yeah.
Don't check out our bathrooms. We don't clean them because we play games.
I mean, apartment bathrooms are pretty terrible as a general rule.
So I think this was released. The date I have written down here is earliest release date and territory appears to be Japan, June 17th, 2004. Is that pretty much the same time as it was released elsewhere?
Sounds about right.
2004, that's getting on in the PS2's life cycle, right?
Yeah, it was... Definitely PS2.
Wasn't this one, I think this was given like the Xbox treatment, like it was a little bit better on the Xbox, one of those...
That's correct, yeah, it was games. A little bit shinier, a little bit sharper.
Yeah, I got a North American release date for September 2004, so it wasn't a huge wait. And there was a Windows port that came out at the same time. But
I played that one.
Yeah. Silent Hill 4 was considered a bit of a runty sibling because it does have some pretty severe issues with it.
Now, like, before we get into those issues, I think that's going to have, we're going to have to, I don't know, people like it when we go negative around here, so.
Well, talking to the right guy there.
Yeah. So what makes Silent Hill 4, The Room, kind of special, both in the series and also, like, in the context of its time?
Well, firstly, because it's, the whole concept of The Room, I thought, was pretty masterful horror design, because it's still sort of the, big word, juxtaposition of the extremely mundane with the horrific, which a lot of Japanese horror does to great effect, I think.
Yeah, you can, right from the onset of this one, it feels a smidge more Japanese horror than the other Silent Hills, which felt like they got a bit more European sort of influence on them.
Yeah, where, especially the ones developed in Europe.
You know, inspiration in the decor. Like, and you look at Silent Hill 2, and it's basically this kind of like Twin Peaks vibe.
I think there's always been a very Japanese flavor to the Silent Hill games, even though they are set in America. It's got that very sort of oppressive sense of wrongness that Japanese horror does really well.
How does the game communicate that? Like,
well, when I think of Silent Hill in terms of color palette, it's always gray. It's gray. There's always this oppressive soundtrack running over everything that just feels like a heavy weight is lying on you. And it feels like, I guess, Japanese horror is all about this sense of entrapment and unable to escape from something huge and inconceivable.
Yeah, I mean, it's not, would you say it's like on the cosmic horror kind of part of the horror spectrum, or is it more like uniquely like Japanese, like the...
I'd say it's glimpsing cosmic horror through the letterbox. It's seeing a little snatch of cosmic horror on the TV late at night. That's Japanese horror, I think.
That's also a lot like The Room itself. You do a lot of like looking into things and just like trying to see what's going on in this game.
Well, one of the other masterstrokes of the game is that you can look out through your peephole in your door and through a hole in the wall at your neighbor and out your window to where everything seems to be going on perfectly normally. And everyone's just getting along with their lives and they can't see or hear anything, the main character, Henry. And it's just this sense that you're trapped in this horrific situation with like safety an inch away and oblivious of everything you're going through that adds to the intensity of it.
Do you think some of this might be sort of a comment on like the sort of weird shut-in culture that Japan seems to be kind of fascinated with in a kind of morbid way?
The hikikomori.
Yeah.
I think is the word. Yes, I think there's definitely a theme running through the game because the main character is characterized as being incredibly socially awkward. Like he goes into horror realms and meets people and just doesn't know what to say.
He really rolls with it in this a lot. Like, he's just, like, he's very...
He's the classic example of the everyman. That's another thing Silent Hill games, especially the non-Japanese developed ones, felt like they needed to do, was try to give the main characters some kind of, like, dark secret, just because Silent Hill 2 did it incredibly well. But Henry Townsend in Silent Hill 4 is the classic example of the blank everyman.
For him, real life is the true horror.
That's very Japanese, sort of...
That and like otaku culture in general, right? Fear of the outside, like hell is other people kind of thing. And
yeah, I mean, the whole the horror of the game is being created by another person.
Right, so we should probably briefly, I guess, talk about the cycle to this game. I don't mean the way it literally cycles. I mean just the way the game kind of works, because obviously, as you said, it's not just, it is a linear game, but it doesn't feel in the same way that you just go from point to point to point. It's a connection of dreams.
Yeah. How it works is that Henry goes through a hole in his bathroom and he happens upon these weird sort of nightmare worlds and happens upon these strange worlds sort of based on real life, but seen through this weird sort of perverse filter by an insane person. And you, through that first half of the game, he goes to each world. He meets a human being who's also been trapped there and witnesses them being killed while fighting off monsters. And there's several points during the nightmare sequence when he can travel back to the room at any point through different holes. And while he's in the room, he can heal up. He can store items he finds because there's a limited inventory system. He can look through the peephole, through the windows, catch up with everything that's going on in the real world, and then sort of creates the sort of safe space for you to calm down a bit.
And I thought it was really cool when you mentioned you can go through different holes. This game has a really neat mechanic that the room itself stores items and also sometimes generates items that are used within the dream.
Yeah. And then around the halfway point of the game in the hospital level, there's a sort of a turnaround, like some kind of evil force sort of invades the room, takes away your safe space so it no longer heals you, and then weird things start happening in there that start hurting you. And then you go through all the levels again in like backwards and having to escort an NPC, which is where the dodgy elements of the gameplay come in, if you ask me. It's the sort of thing that turned a lot of people off.
Yeah, let's get into that in just a minute. I just want to say I really love when games do that, where they like build up this like refuge that you get really dependent on, especially in like a survival horror type game, where if I can just make it to this back to wherever, then I'll be fine. And then they take that away from you, and it's really disconcerting.
Yeah, it's like if monsters start getting into the Resident Evil safe rooms and
taking
items from your box.
Which actually, so talking about the contrast between the dream and the room, you know, like I also think it's really interesting how your perspective changes, right? So the room being first person and the rest of the world being played in third person, more like classic Silent Hill that way.
I like that because it sort of, while you're in the room, the whole idea is to get you familiar with it. And the first person not only gives you a better chance to examine all the different fixtures and fittings in the room, but it also creates this sense of coziness, I suppose. Sort of, you feel more enclosed in Henry's space. And then when you get into the nightmare world, it goes back to the normal Silent Hill camera, where the camera's sort of third person following, but on a sort of lazy chase algorithm in some places and fixed in some places, which in other Silent Hill games and in this one creates this sort of detachment that adds to the dreamlike sense of the game.
Yeah, and something that I think is very cool about that is because the mechanics switch around from first to third person, when things start going weird in the room, you don't have a response at that point because you don't have the controls that actually give you any means to stop it. You just have to look and be terrified as, you know, your world unravels to an extent.
Do you think this like kind of this theme of like helplessness and like the surreal and horrific, like breaking in through the mundane, do you think that's like related to sort of the Japanese fascination with like nature always kind of wins in the end? They do live on this like this collection of islands where there's like constantly issues with the mountains and the flooding and mudslides, and
it's probably what gives a lot of the sense in Japanese horror, that the horror just happens randomly to anyone who happens to walk into it. There's very rarely a sense of righteousness, like you see in like a horror slasher film where the American teens are dying because they did something bad.
Oh yeah, they did. Yeah, there's some, yeah. But and then there's also like this element of being separated from society, because that's like there's an aspect of Japanese culture that's very, very, I mean, not an aspect, it's like probably the dominant aspect. It's just the community nature of it, where it's like, it's, which is part of their fascination with shut-ins. I think it's just like, you've cut yourself off from society. But anyway, yeah. So like the problems with this game.
For one thing, half of it is a bloody escort quest.
An escort quest through environments that you already went through.
Yes. Where the escort in question has very poor self-preservation instincts. In fact, it's pretty well advised to not give them any weapon at all. Because you can give them weapons, but they will insist on attacking monsters. And that's a lot of non-Japanese Silent Hill games seem to get stuck on this idea that Silent Hill has to have combat in it. There's usually an option to run away as well.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. Like, this game would be vastly better without combat. Like, if it was just story and going through things, I think it would be so much more successful.
I would argue that there needs to be a sense of threat in a horror game. And I think combat is usually a decent enough way to do that. Because if you don't have any sort of threat at all, it's difficult to feel threat. I'll agree that Silent Hill 4 sort of overdoes the monster spam a lot more than in previous Silent Hill games. And of course, in previous Silent Hill games, when you were in the open-ended street exploration part of the game, it was pretty easy to escape from monsters. I mean, that was the idea in Silent Hill 2. You weren't supposed to kill everything, because a lot of the monsters were just dealing with their own problems, I think.
Have pity on this poor monster.
They have a hard time.
Yeah, so like, but that's a good point you made. Do I call you by your moniker? Do I call you Yahtzee, or do I call you
Yahtzee's Ben? Father. Okay. My wife calls me Yahtzee, so you can call me Yahtzee.
My father is Mr. Yahtzee. I'm just... yeah, no, but like what you were saying about how like without the combat, then it erases some of the threat. And I think that's one interesting, it's kind of the, you could make this game where it's basically just story and nothing else, but then it could be a visual novel. And I don't think it would have the same effect. I think that the especially for survival horror games, like, you can have like very little combat, but it still works because it allows the player to retain that sense of, oh no, this is me. Like, at a certain point in an engrossing game, no matter how primitive it looks, like, you, if it's doing its job, like, you will feel like, oh no, I'm doing this. I got to go here. I got to do that. You know, like, and that adds to, like, the kind of feeling of like terror. I think it wouldn't be the same if you're just reading a book.
And while the combat is kind of sticky and awkward to control, as it is in a lot of science games, a lot of survival horror games, that's, I argue that's kind of the point. You're not supposed to be a powerhouse. You're supposed to feel vulnerable. Combat's supposed to be the last resort. You're not supposed to be comfortable with it.
Henry's like some random schlub. Like, he's not going to fight very well. Yeah,
he's a random schlub, and he's got a bit of pipe that he found in his bathroom to hit things with.
Again, this is very relatable.
Like, what I think actually is you noted, I think this is actually the main problem here, is that the flow of the game and the way the levels are structured, they don't really allow for much runaway time. You know, obviously Silent Hill, you go in and out of buildings, and when you're not in buildings, you're basically running. You know, dogs, get out of there. The ape men, get out of there. But this game is basically, we'll say, all inside. For the most part, that's the way the physical areas feel. The forest, to an extent, has a little bit more running and dashing. But then you rescue...
Eileen?
Okay, I was going to say Ellen, but thank goodness I was close. When she's there, and she's obsessed with getting into fights, or she can get left behind, or she can get trapped around something, you're then kind of forced to go into the combat more, because when it's just you can just kind of like fudge it and get knocked around a little bit, and eventually go back to the room. But once it's her, you're playing a completely different game where you're basically forced into the combat, even when you're trying not to get into it.
Which I guess is probably less scary than it is annoying, right?
That's the problem. It gets annoying.
Yeah, I think when it comes to survival horror games, gameplay design, it doesn't have to be fun, but it has to be engaging, and it has to be intimidating, but it can't be annoying.
That's a fine line to walk, too. I think players like nowadays are very averse to this kind of thing. I don't think they'd like it.
Yeah, I thought the I think what touches on that is this one really, like, the plot is just not great.
I mean, I actually rate it, of the original Japanese Silent Hill games, I rate the plot just after Silent Hill 2, personally.
And, why do you say that?
Well, I think Silent Hill 1 sort of suffered a bit by indulging the whole an evil cult is behind it all concept, which I always think is kind of weak storytelling in horror games. And Silent Hill 3 was just a continuation of that. But Silent Hill 4 does what Silent Hill 2 does, in that it's a story about individuals and the choices they make and the struggles they're after. One of whom happens to be a psychotic wizard.
I probably said this wrong. It doesn't feed the plot to you in a way that's interesting. Because you get documents and you don't, like, you get like big chunks where you don't really get any plot. And then by the time I got through about 2/3 of the game, I was like, oh, just go to like the end. Just, I want to see what happens at this point. Cause it's quite a slow-paced game, despite only being, like, 8 hours long.
Well, maybe I just like games to be slow-paced. I guess I'm with the Mike Stu class of Red Letter Media school of kind of liking a boring, slow-paced story, like the first Star Trek film.
Yeah.
Kind of gradually lets you get comfortable in the world, I guess.
Yeah,
I mean, a fast-moving like horror experience isn't really horror. It's almost more like just a roller coaster. It's like it's just constantly terrifying.
This one has the combat that is not great, and that's what I'm talking about. Dragging is I want to see where it's going and all that. I wanted to see, especially I really like the I really like the way that you look out and get like little snippets of stuff happening. That's really cool. I really like the fact that there's just non-moments where, like, nothing happens, and you just, like, look through the portals, and people are just wandering around, and, you know, the characters are just watching TV, and that's, like, that's really, like, a slow burn kind of deal.
So that's the thing, right? Like, if this game had a competent combat system, where this game would be so much better.
I just realized we hadn't even mentioned the ghosts, which are part of the game. And
oh, yes.
Yeah.
That's one of the things I don't like about the game. In a survival horror experience that had historically at this point been about systematically exploring your environments, finding all the health drinks and the keys and the puzzle items, to then hound you throughout the game by unkillable monsters that hurt you if they're even next to you, that was a very poor design choice.
I thought the actual ghosts themselves were really interesting. The implications of it, and that they're constantly like hassling you, is like, oh crap, I am not able to remove the horror from this area. You know, like you can't clear an area and feel safe.
I mean, yeah, it would probably sound good on paper, but as we were just saying earlier, you don't want it to get annoying.
Especially since you have to hit them a lot with the combat. Yeah. You have to fight them.
And they lose their impact after a while, and they constantly harass you.
Also, when they get stuck, I had a couple of them get stuck underneath one of the stairwells, and they just like kept spinning around, and that was like, oh, well, it's a video game, I guess. There you go. But I like the idea of the Sword of Obedience. Is that the name of it?
I think so, yeah.
The fact that you get these swords that basically can permanently pin down one of these ghosts, and you can remove that to free the ghost. And I thought that was like a really cool way of like trying to get the player to basically decide, you know, oh, is this one the most annoying one? Do I really want to burn through this now? Am I willing to free them after, like, so I can use this sword later? Thought that was a really cool proposition, except that the way the game works, there's four extremely annoying ghosts, and it's really obvious which four they are. So you basically want to sword those four. So kind of.
Yeah. It's the four open quotes boss ghosts.
Yeah. So we got to move on to ranking this thing.
We put Silent Hill 2 at 22. That's a reference point for this one.
Okay. So it's not going up there.
No.
I
don't know. Let's let Yahtzee give his.
I'm just going down the list here. I mean, as I say, it's a game that I like, but this is a subjective thing. I like Killer 7, but it's not a game I'd recommend to many people.
Did we rank Killer 7?
No, we haven't. I would personally put Killer 7 above The Room if that was, you know, on the cards. Mostly because I think the combat in that blends better with the game, even though it's... I really like that game as well. I mean, this one, I really like that they took Silent Hill. This is, though I don't you know, necessarily love it. I do think this is around probably my third favorite Silent Hill, after 2 and 1, because it was the one that they went, we're going to try and make a game that's like in the Silent Hill universe. It's in this kind of like scary, like horror thing, but not Silent Hill. As was stated, like it's Silent Hill. So you do this. And
yeah, there was a urban legend going around that it was originally a non-associated horror game, which actually isn't true.
But yeah, I heard that rumor, and when I read that for this episode, I was like, oh, that wasn't true? Man, I look like a real ass.
But, you know, I didn't think it was true, because it really does feel like a Silent Hill game. It's not set in Silent Hill, it doesn't have the usual Silent Hill structure, but it still feels like a Silent Hill game.
And also, game publishers are, like, terrified of creating original IP when they don't have
to. Yeah.
I feel it fails at taking the parts from the previous Silent Hill games.
Well, I mean, I think that by rejecting the earlier Silent Hill games, it made this one stronger, because you can't really top two in what it does. And Silent Hill 1, well, they did Silent Hill 3, and that's kind of a closed area as well. So they didn't have that much to work with other than there's a spookiness.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much every other Silent Hill game, especially after it went to the West, was just trying to be Silent Hill 2 again. So I don't think it's necessarily a good thing to just try to be Silent Hill.
I really think with the combat in this one especially, because they improved it, they added dodging and stuff, which I don't think was in 1 or 2. Is that in 3? Or is 3 the same as 2?
3 is very similar to 2.
That's what I thought.
Same engine. It copies some of the levels as well.
But so yeah, this one they added dodging and stuff, which is this weird thing to me that they tried to like spruce it up and make it like a more combat-y game, and I'm like, don't...
Yeah, it was the first Silent Hill game to have a health bar, funnily enough.
Right, that's right. It's just, you lose your health and get it back.
To be fair, like, the ghosts without the health bar would be, like, a whole...
other... Oh, yeah, that's what's saying to me, is like, when they were designing this game or something, they went, oh, yeah, we gotta put combat, we gotta put, like, this in it. And it's like, guys, slow down. Maybe you didn't need to do exactly that. Maybe you could have pushed that further, which I think is a shame, because I think, at least in my end, I think that's what lets the game down as well, is, yeah, when it is stuck sticking to convention, and that's not entirely its fault. It's not like they were going to make some... I don't think Konami would have probably signed off on like a very conceptual game. I think that they had to show the executives a more traditional game in there.
So I'm going to suggest, I'm looking down in like the 200s, the low 200s. I'm looking at several NES games are right next to each other. There's G.I. Joe, Star Tropics, Blaster Master.
Noticed Human Nikki at 155. And
it's about that good, you think?
I'm seeing Full Throttle around there as well, and personally, I'd put it around there. I thought Full Throttle had a similar thing where story was fun concept, let down with some dodgy gameplay decisions.
Cal?
I think Yume Nikki was an interesting one because it was daring enough to be like, I don't need combat. I know it wouldn't really have combat because it's made in RPG Maker, so it would be weird to give it proper combat. But, you know, like, I thought that was like a really... When it comes to that, I like that it was just like, you just wander around and stuff is kind of really weird, which is what I really liked about Yume Nikki. My only problem is this one is it kind of fun or not fun, but effective enough to really get up that high?
Well, you can't really judge everything by fun. Horror's not supposed to be fun.
Yeah, so I'm saying, like, well, is it effective like, as a horror?
It's not supposed to be genuinely horrifying. All right, just going to show my cards here. Like, I think everything has to be fun, or it's, like, it has to be fun on some level. Satisfying, I guess.
Is it engaging enough to be, like, in that general area?
I find a lot of what happens in Banjo-Kazooie to be more terrifying, if that helps. You know, like that kind of thing. It's just there's some weird dissociation thing that, I don't know. I mean, yeah.
I got to say, I've got to check. Did anyone like the sort of voice acting and acting that the Henry character actually did? I couldn't stand him. He just so off.
There's a tradition with Silent Hill games that the voice acting tends to be a bit off. And it works in some of them. In Silent Hill 2, it works very well. But yeah, Silent Hill 4, Henry always felt like he was struggling to get the words out through some kind of serious throat problem.
How about we put it below Lemmings, above Banjo-Kazooie? And I don't really have a reason for that. I just feel like it's probably...
Hey, anything that beats Banjo down a peg, you know, I'm always for that.
Well, I'm just saying, like, I feel like this is a more worthwhile experience, but, like, Lemmings, Receiver, Bangayo are all, like, kind of much more inventive games, let's say. Whereas, like, Silent Hill 4 does... It seems like it kind of, like, for how late it came out in the PS2's life cycle, it seems like they ran out of steam pretty quickly.
Well, you know, okay, I mean, like, I've got to check, because we haven't have it on the list, but, Yeltsin, you've played through, like, the Echo Knight games or whatever, have you?
No, I haven't.
Oh, okay. They're sort of, like, basically first-person haunting games, where you just, like, lots of creepy stuff happens to you, and they're kind of PS1, PS2 thing. And the thing is, when I look at those, they're kind of, like, really effective without having much sort of getting bogged down in the elements that I think do weaken this game. I mean, I wish I enjoyed it more.
But in the context of Silent Hill, it's interesting. But it really tries. And I don't feel Banjo-Kazooie tries anything besides, like, oh, it's like Mario 64 and there's a bear, you know? And it's like...
But no jiggies, though. You got to get those jiggies. It sounds like you're agreeing with me, so that's where it's going to go. Right below Lemmings, right above Banjo-Kazooie. We got to put this one to bed.
I can live with that.
All right. Excellent. Thank you, guys. That's all for this episode. Special thanks goes out to our lovely co-hosts and compatriots, our booking agent Jeff Rude, our theme song MC Norm, check him out at NormallyRetro on Twitter, and our technical assistant, video editor, and scriptwriter Ed Burns. You can support this podcast by making a small monthly donation at patreon.com/HG101. I know I did. By subscribing to the HG101 YouTube channel, and by following at GC9X and at HG_101 on Twitter. You can also hang out with us at our Discord channel. It's at bit.ly/HG Discord. But most importantly, help us spread the love of games by getting on iTunes, subscribing to HG101, and giving us a 5-star review. Do it because you like us and you want us to succeed. Until next time, keep keeping it real.